Chapter 168. Gone, on a healthy autumn day, the Marshalsea prisoner, weak but otherwise restored, sat listening to a voice that read to him. On a healthy autumn day, when the golden fields had been reaped and plowed again, when the summer fruits had ripened and waned, when the green perspectives of hops had been laid low by the busy pickers, when the apples clustering in the orchards were russet, and the berries of the mountain ash were crimson among the yellowing foliage. Already in the woods, glimpses of the hardy winter that was coming were to be caught through unaccustomed openings among the boughs, where the prospect shone defined and clear, free from the bloom of the drowsy summer weather, which had rested on it as the bloom lies on the plum. So, from the seashore the ocean was no longer to be seen lying asleep in the heat, but its thousand sparkling eyes were open, and its whole breadth was in joyful animation. From the cool sand on the beach to the little sails on the horizon, drifting away like autumn-tinted leaves that had drifted from the trees. Changeless and barren, looking ignorantly at all the seasons with its fixed, pinched face of poverty and care, the prison had not a touch of any of these beauties on it. Blossom what would, its bricks and bars bore uniformly the same dead crop. Yet Clennam, listening to the voice as it read to him, heard in it all that great nature was doing, heard in it all the soothing songs she sings to man. At no mother's knee, but hers had he ever dwelt in his youth on hopeful promises, on playful fancies, on the harvests of tenderness and humility that lie hidden in the yearly fostered seeds of the imagination, on the oaks of retreat from blighting winds that have the germs of their strong roots in nursery acorns. But, in the tones of the voice that read to him, there were memories of an old feeling of such things, and echoes of every merciful and loving whisper that had ever stolen to him in his life. When the voice stopped, he put his hand over his eyes, murmuring that the light was strong upon them. Little Dorrit put the book by, and presently arose quietly to shade the window. Maggie sat at her needlework in her old place. The light softened. Little Dorrit brought her chair closer to his side. This will soon be over now, dear Mr. Clennam. Not only are Mr. Doyce's letters to you so full of friendship and encouragement, but Mr. Ruck says his letters to him are so full of help, and that everybody, now a little anger is past, is so considerate, and speaks so well of you, that it will soon be over now. Apostrophe, dear girl. Dear heart. Good angel. Apostrophe, you praise me far too much. And yet it is such an exquisite pleasure to me to hear you speak so feelingly, and to see, apostrophe said little Dorrit, raising her eyes to his, how deeply you mean it, that I cannot say don't. Apostrophe, he lifted her hand to his lips. You have been here many, many times, when I have not seen you, little Dorrit. Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes, I have been here sometimes, when I have not come into the room. Apostrophe, very often? Apostrophe, apostrophe, rather often, apostrophe said little Dorrit, timidly. Every day? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I think, apostrophe said little Dorrit, after hesitating, that I have been here at least twice every day. Apostrophe, he might have released the little light hand after fervently kissing it again, but that, with a very gentle lingering where it was, it seemed to court being retained. He took it in both of his, and it lay softly on his breast. Dear little Dorrit, it is not my imprisonment, only that will soon be over. This sacrifice of you must be ended. We must learn to part again, and to take our different ways so wide asunder. You have not forgotten what we said together, when you came back. Apostrophe, apostrophe, oh no, I have not forgotten it. But something has been you feel quite strong today, don't you? Apostrophe, apostrophe, quite strong. Apostrophe, the hand he held crept up a little nearer his face. Do you feel quite strong enough to know what a great fortune I have got? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I shall be very glad to be told. No fortune can be too great or good for little Dorrit. Apostrophe, I have been anxiously waiting to tell you. I have been longing and longing to tell you. You are sure you will not take it? Apostrophe, never. Apostrophe, apostrophe, you are quite sure you will not take half of it? Apostrophe, apostrophe, never, dear little Dorrit. Apostrophe, apostrophe, as she looked at him silently, there was something in her affectionate face that he did not quite comprehend. Something that could have broken into tears in a moment, and yet that was happy and proud. You will be sorry to hear what I have to tell you about Fanny. Poor Fanny has lost everything. She has nothing left but her husband's income. All that Papa gave her when she married was lost as your money was lost. It was in the same hands, and it is all gone. Apostrophe, Arthur was more shocked than surprised to hear it. I had hoped it might not be so bad, apostrophe, he said. But I had feared a heavy loss there, knowing the connection between her husband and the defaulter. Apostrophe, yes. It is all gone. I am very sorry for Fanny. Very, very, very sorry for poor Fanny. My poor brother too. Apostrophe, had he property in the same hands? Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes. And it's all gone. How much do you think my own great fortune is? Apostrophe, apostrophe, as Arthur looked at her inquiringly, with a new apprehension on him, she withdrew her hand, and laid her face down on the spot where it had rested. I have nothing in the world. I am as poor as when I lived here. When Papa came over to England, he confided everything he had to the same hands, and it is all swept away. Oh, my dearest and best, are you quite sure you will not share my fortune with me now? Apostrophe, apostrophe, locked in his arms, held to his heart, with his manly tears upon her own cheek, she drew the slight hand round his neck, and clasped it in its fellow hand. Apostrophe, never to part, my dearest Arthur, never any more, until the last. I never was rich before, I never was proud before, I never was happy before, I am rich in being taken by you, I am proud in having been resigned by you, I am happy in being with you in this prison, as I should be happy in coming back to it with you, if it should be the will of God, and comforting and serving you with all my love and truth. I am yours anywhere, everywhere. I love you dearly. I would rather pass my life here with you, and go out daily, working for our bread, than I would have the greatest fortune that ever was told, and be the greatest lady that ever was honored. Oh, if poor Papa may only know how blessed at last my heart is, in this room where he suffered for so many years. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Maggie had of course been staring from the first, and had of course been crying her eyes out long before this. Maggie was now so overjoyed that, after hugging her little mother with all her might, she went downstairs like a clogged hornpipe, to find somebody or other to whom to impart her gladness. Whom should Maggie meet, but Flora and Mr. F.S. and opportunely coming in? And whom else, as a consequence of that meeting, should little Dorrit find waiting for herself, when, a good 2 or 3 hours afterwards, she went out? Flora's eyes were a little red, and she seemed rather out of spirits. Mr. F.S. Ant was so stiffened that she had the appearance of being past bending by any means short of powerful mechanical pressure. Her bonnet was cocked up behind in a terrific manner, and her stony reticule was as rigid as if it had been petrified by the Gorgon's head, and had got it at that moment inside. With these imposing attributes, Mr. F.S. Ant, publicly seated on the steps of the Marshal's official residence, had been for the 2 or 3 hours in question a great boon to the younger inhabitants of the borough, whose sallies of humor she had considerably flushed herself, by resenting at the point of her umbrella, from time to time. Painfully aware, Miss Dorrit, I am sure, apostrophe said Flora, that to propose an adjournment to any place to one so far removed by fortune, and so courted and caressed by the best society, must ever appear intruding, even if not a pie shop far below your present sphere and a back parlor, though a civil man, but if for the sake of Arthur cannot overcome it more improper now than ever late Doyce and Clennam. One last remark I might wish to make, one last explanation I might wish to offer, perhaps your good nature might excuse under pretense of 3 kidney ones the humble place of conversation. Apostrophe, rightly interpreting this rather obscure speech, little Dorrit returned that she was quite at Flora's disposition. Flora accordingly led the way across the road to the pie shop in question. Mr. F.S. Ant stalking across in the rear, and putting herself in the way of being run over, with a perseverance worthy of a better cause. When the three kidney ones, apostrophe which were to be a blind to the conversation, were set before them on three little tin platters, each kidney one ornamented with a hole at the top, into which the civil man poured hot gravy out of a spouted can, as if he were feeding three lamps, Flora took out her pocket handkerchief. If fancy's fair dreams, apostrophe she began, have ever pictured that, when Arthur cannot overcome it, pray excuse me, was restored to freedom even a pie as far from flaky as the present, and so deficient in kidney, as to be in that respect like a minced nutmeg might not prove unacceptable, if offered by the hand of true regard such visions, have forever fled and all is cancelled, but being aware that tender relations are in contemplation beg to state that I heartily wish well to both, and find no fault with either not the least, it may be withering to know that ere the hand of time had made me much less slim than formerly and dreadfully red on the slightest exertion, particularly after eating I well know when it takes the form of a rash, it might have been and was not through the interruption of parents, and mental torpor succeeded until the mysterious clue was held by Mr. F. Still I would not be ungenerous to either, and I heartily wish well to both. Apostrophe, little Dora took her hand, and thanked her for all her old kindness. Call it not kindness, apostrophe, returned Flora, giving her an honest kiss, for you always were the best and dearest little thing that ever was, if I may take the liberty, and even in a money point of view a saving being conscience itself, though I must add much more agreeable than mine ever was to me, for though not I hope more burdened than other people's, yet I have always found it far readier to make one uncomfortable than comfortable, and evidently taking a greater pleasure in doing it, but I am wandering, one hope I wish to express here, yet the closing scene draws in, and it is that I do trust for the sake of old times and old sincerity that Arthur will know that I didn't desert him in his misfortunes, but that I came backwards and forwards constantly to ask if I could do anything for him, and that I sat in the pie shop, where they very civilly fetched something warm in a tumbler from the hotel, and really very nice hours after hours, to keep him company over the way without his knowing it. Apostrophe, Flora really had tears in her eyes now, and they showed her to great advantage. Over and above which, apostrophe, said Flora, I earnestly beg you as the dearest thing that ever was, if you'll still excuse the familiarity from one who moves in very different circles, to let Arthur understand that I don't know after all whether it wasn't all nonsense between us, though pleasant at the time and trying to, and certainly Mr. F. did work a change, and the spell being broken nothing could be expected to take place without weaving it afresh, which various circumstances have combined to prevent, of which perhaps not the least powerful was that it was not to be. I am not prepared to say that, if it had been agreeable to Arthur, and had brought itself about naturally in the first instance, I should not have been very glad, being of a lively disposition and moped at home, where Papa undoubtedly is the most aggravating of his sex, and not improved since having been cut down by the hand of the incendiary into something, of which I never saw the counterpart in all my life, but jealousy is not my character, nor ill will though many faults. Apostrophe, without having been able closely to follow Mrs. Finching through this labyrinth, little Dorrit understood its purpose, and cordially accepted the trust. The withered chaplet, my dear, apostrophe, said Flora, with great enjoyment, is then perished, the column is crumbled, and the pyramid is standing upside down upon its, what's his name, call it not giddiness, call it not weakness, call it not folly, I must now retire into privacy and look upon the ashes of departed joys, no more, but taking a further liberty of paying for the pastry which has formed the humble pretext of our interview will forever say adieu. ...... Mr. F. S. and, who had eaten her pie with great solemnity, and who had been elaborating some grievous scheme of injury in her mind since her first assumption of that public position on the marshal's steps, took the present opportunity of addressing the following Sibyllic apostrophe to the relict of her late nephew. Bring him forward, and I'll chuck him out, O Winder. ... Flora tried in vain to soothe the excellent woman by explaining that they were going home to dinner. Mr. F.S. Ant persisted in replying, bring him forward, and I'll chuck him out, O Winder. ... Having reiterated this demand an immense number of times, with a sustained glare of defiance at Little Dorrit, Mr. F.S. Ant folded her arms, and sat down in the corner of the pie shop parlor, steadfastly refusing to budge until such time as he should have been brought forward, ... and the chucking portion of his destiny accomplished. In this condition of things, Flora confided to Little Dorrit that she had not seen Mr. F.S. Ant so full of life and character for weeks, that she would find it necessary to remain there hours perhaps, ... until the inexorable old lady could be softened, and that she could manage her best alone. They parted, therefore, in the friendliest manner, and with the kindest feeling on both sides. Mr. F.S. Ant holding out like a grim fortress, and Flora becoming in need of refreshment, a messenger was dispatched to the hotel for the tumbler already glanced at, which was afterwards replenished. With the aid of its content, a newspaper, and some skimming of the Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.